It is Monday, November 24th, 2025. And if you have been anywhere near the screens lately, you know that the last few weeks have been, well, a shockwave across the digital asset space. This isn't just volatility.
Yeah.
This feels like capitulation.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we're navigating what you can only describe as extreme market conditions. Bitcoin has suffered a historic rout. It's wiped out all of its hard-won gains from 2025. What started the year with all this institutional hope, all this bullish momentum, it's now become profoundly defensive.
And the sentiment is just gone.
Sentiment is defined by one key characteristic right now: unadulterated fear.
So we have a massive amount of material to unpack today in this rundown. Our mission really is to connect three enormous interconnected themes that are dominating everything.
Right. First, we're going to do a forensic breakdown of Bitcoin's sharp plunge. We need to go beyond just the price on the screen and look deep into the derivatives market.
Because that's what's signaling the intense pain.
Exactly. It reveals the real mechanics of this downward spiral.
Okay. And second, we're going to move from those macro mechanics to a very specific, very high-profile story of financial contraction.
The Trump family's crypto-linked wealth.
Yeah, we're going to detail how billions in paper wealth built on these really concentrated bets have basically evaporated in a matter of weeks.
And then finally, we'll shift focus to the altcoin ecosystem. And it's a story of contrasts, really. You have this institutional panic and massive de-risking on one side.
And on the other.
Strategic, contrarian accumulation, specifically in Ethereum, and the emergence of these powerful new AI-driven projects that seem to, you know, completely defy the current fear index.
Let's start with Bitcoin then, because the price action isn't just a data point. It feels like the shockwave driving every other decision in the market right now.
When we talk about a shockwave, we are talking about magnitude. The market had established this psychological stronghold for Bitcoin near the $97,000 mark.
Right, that was the consolidation range everyone was watching. The new floor.
The new floor, exactly. And we watched that level break with frightening speed. Bitcoin briefly touched $89,000, which confirmed the structural breakdown, and then recently hit an extremely worrying low of $80,548.
That $80,548 number is so critical, not just because it's a low, but because it retroactively just invalidates the entire 2025 bull run thesis for so many traders.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls the coin's year-to-date performance into negative territory.
Which means anyone who bought Bitcoin at any point this year
is
now sitting on an unrealized loss, assuming they haven't averaged down aggressively.
And the psychological impact of erasing an entire year's worth of gains, you can't overstate that.
You really can't. And when we zoom out and look at the total market rout, the figures are just staggering. Since Bitcoin's peak of $126,200 back in October, we've seen over $1 trillion in value just eliminated. But across the entire digital asset space, this isn't the gentle correction of a healthy bull market. This is a systemic, leverage-driven cascade.
And leverage really is the engine of this crash. We've got data from CoinGlass showing that total market liquidations just blew past the $1 billion mark.
A billion. And Bitcoin contributed a massive chunk of that, right?
$569.37 million of that total.
Brad?
For those who aren't, you know, steeped in the market mechanics, liquidations are a forced sell-off of these leveraged positions.
And they're often triggered automatically when margin requirements aren't met. It creates this self-feeding downward pressure that just accelerates the whole collapse.
It's a domino effect.
It is. Nigel Green, the CEO of Devere Group, explained this perfectly. He emphasized that when people borrow heavily used leverage to magnify their gains, any unexpected reversal forces the exchanges to just close those positions.
Right, to prevent further losses.
And this forced selling floods the market with supply at the absolute worst possible time, which pushes prices down faster than any organic selling pressure ever could.
That process of forced selling is what defines capitulation.
Yeah.
And you can see it reflected perfectly in the mood of the market. The fear and greed index. I mean, we use it as a thermometer for market psychology. It plunged.
It plunged dramatically to a reading of 11.
Elect.
A reading of 11 is not just fear, it's deep, bone-chilling, extreme fear territory.
Historically, though, a reading that low can sometimes signal a bottom, can it?
It can. It often indicates a momentary bottoming process because it suggests that almost everyone who wanted to sell in a panic has now done so. It implies emotional exhaustion.
But that's just sentiment.
That's just sentiment.
Yeah.
The technical structure suggests we are in very serious trouble.
Okay, let's talk about the charts. Because despite that deep, oversold signal, the outlook is, Well, you called it defensive.
The word defensive is key. We completely lack the characteristics of a healthy bull trend. You know, higher highs and higher lows, sustained volume on rallies, that's all gone.
And Bitcoin is now testing that critical $80,000 support level.
Aggressively testing it. And that level has immense psychological and structural importance. It was major resistance earlier this year, and now it's basically the final line of defense for the entire 2025 narrative.
So failing to hold $80,000 is the difference between a painful correction and, what, an outright structural bear market?
Potentially, yes. But let's look at the momentum data, because you mentioned that exhaustion might be near.
Right, the RSI.
We look at the relative strength index, the RSI, which measures the speed and change of price moves. It hit 26.
26.
To put that in context, that is one of the deepest oversold readings we have seen all year. Anything below 30 signals oversold conditions.
So the selling pressure could be reaching exhaustion.
It suggests the price movement near $80,500 might be unsustainable in the immediate short term.
So we have two conflicting signals here. We have extreme oversold conditions suggesting a bounce is statistically likely, but then we have this critical structural support at $80,000 that, if it breaks, signals disaster.
Precisely. And that's where the dire warnings are coming from. The most dramatic technical forecast we've seen circulating suggests that if the $80,000 support level fails decisively.
And we're talking a weekly close below it.
Yes, a weekly close. If that happens, the current technical structure implies 60% more downside is possible.
60%. 60% more downside from $80,000. That would take us down near what, $32,000?
That's the number.
That is a cataclysmic forecast. What structural failure supports that?
It's based on analyzing the sheer magnitude of the breakdown from the $126,000 peak. If the $80,000 level doesn't hold, key long-term moving averages, like the 200-week, they all come back into play.
It's a complete repricing.
It suggests the market would need to reprice based on a complete liquidation of the entire 2024-2025 growth story. It's not a prediction. It's a model of maximum possible pain if the structure fails.
It paints a picture of extreme anxiety. But this is crypto, isn't it? Even in the middle of all this chaos, you still have the massive bulls taking an absolutely contrarian stance.
Oh, absolutely. The billionaire class remains undeterred. Cameron Winklevoss of Gemini, he took to social media to offer this wildly bullish counterview.
What did he say?
He claimed, perhaps defiantly, that this was the last time you'll ever be able to buy Bitcoin below $90.
I find that fascinating. That level of conviction is essential to the crypto culture, but it stands in such sharp contrast to the financial reality facing the biggest players, the institutions.
Mm-hmm.
The question isn't just who is buying, but who is aggressively not buying right now. And that brings us directly to the institutional flight.
The absence of institutional demand is arguably the most significant factor driving this plunge. We know the narrative that propelled us earlier this year was the launch of the U.S. spot Bitcoin ETF.
All right, the flood of traditional finance capital.
That thesis seems to be failing dramatically right now. Citi analyst Alex Saunders put a really fine point on it, saying that ETF flows, which he called the main driver of prices this year, are now drying up completely.
It's more than just drying up, though, isn't it? It's reversing.
It is reversing. The 7-day average for U.S. spot ETF flows remains firmly negative. This is sustained net selling from TradFi allocators.
So they're not buying the dip.
They're not only reluctant to add exposure into this drawdown, they are actively withdrawing capital. The lack of that incremental institutional buying just reinforces the whole problem.
Okay, let's put some numbers on this, specifically looking at BlackRock, which is kind of the bellwether for the entire institutional world.
BlackRock made two major transfers to Coinbase Prime. They deposited 2,822 BTC, valued at about $243 million, and 36,283 ETH, valued at over $100 million.
Which are just massive strategic movements.
Huge. And while it's not immediately confirmed as selling, large transfers to custody platforms like that often precede distribution or active liquidation.
And the redemption figures seem to support that idea.
Absolutely. BlackRock alone has recorded $2.5 billion in redemptions this month. When you combine their figure with other issuers, U.S. spot ETFs have seen about $3.5 billion in total withdrawals just this month.
$3.5 billion in November alone. How does that compare historically?
It's significant. It makes this the second largest monthly outflow figure since February, which was right after that initial post-launch excitement wore off.
So the institutional conviction that was built up all year has just evaporated.
It's not just profit-taking. It feels like capitulation driven by de-risking mandates.
Okay, so institutional money is fleeing through the ETFs. What about the leveraged traders in the derivatives market? Are they trying to buy this dip, or are they equally fearful?
The derivatives market is screaming risk off. We're seeing futures open interest, or OI, just drifting systematically lower.
Which means persistent risk reduction.
Traders are not attempting to catch the falling knives. They're not adding exposure into weakness. They are systematically unwinding risk, closing positions.
And we can see that reflected in the funding rates too, right?
Correct. Funding rates across the top 500 assets have shifted decisively into neutral to negative territory.
And when those rates are negative, it means people are basically getting paid to short the market.
Or at least there's no cost to hold a short. It confirms a broad cooling in leveraged long demand and a massive defensive shift. There is zero conviction to buy here with leverage.
Now let's talk about the options market. This gives us insight into how the pros are hedging, and it reflects an extreme bearish outlook, right, through the 25 delta skew.
The 25 delta skew, yeah. It's a way to measure the difference in implied volatility between calls and puts. And when the skew remains negative across all maturities, it means traders are paying a much higher premium for downside protection.
For puts.
Than they are for upside participation. It's a hallmark of extreme bearish positioning.
We saw specific data on the one-week tenor being particularly aggressive.
The one-week tenor showed a premium of roughly 14% for puts. Think of it like buying fire insurance.
Right.
Traders are willing to pay significantly more for immediate downside protection because they anticipate a further collapse, and soon.
And this demand for downside protection creates a really dangerous mechanical feedback loop that actually amplifies the selling pressure in the spot market. Can you walk us through that mechanism? It's technically crucial.
It's a textbook example of delta hedging, and it's basically a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Okay.
Here's how it works. When a sophisticated trader buys an aggressive put option, a contract giving them the right to sell at a lower price, they're transferring risk to the option dealer.
So the dealer's now short. They've taken on a lot of short exposure.
Precisely. And to remain delta neutral, they don't want to take a massive directional bet. The dealer has to hedge that risk.
So what do they do?
Since the price is falling and the puts are gaining value, the dealer must sell an equivalent amount of futures contracts or perpetuals in the spot market to offset their risk.
So the very act of hedging against the price drop causes more selling in the underlying asset.
Exactly. The more the price falls, the more puts are bought, and the more futures the dealers have to sell to stay neutral. It's a massive mechanical source of selling pressure that is entirely independent of fundamentals.
It's a vicious, self-reinforcing downward spiral.
That's exactly what it is. And we saw this play out precisely around that psychological $90,000 level.
The data confirms it.
Absolutely. Once Bitcoin failed to hold the $93,000 level, demand for put premium at the $90,000 strike just shot up. This tells you exactly where the pros had concentrated their pain point.
So they used the options market to bet on $90 K failing.
And their hedging action helped ensure that failure happened faster.
That's a devastating insight into how professional positioning can just amplify market weakness. And that volatility, that rapid destruction of value, leads us directly to our next major theme. The highly visible financial pain being felt by specific high-profile holdings, namely those linked to the Trump family.
And this is where the story shifts from these macro market mechanics to the individual consequences of speculative concentration. The recent crypto rout has levied a significant financial hit, reducing the Trump family's overall net worth by well over $1 billion since early September.
Over $1 billion wiped out in just a matter of weeks. That's a staggering rate of wealth destruction, especially when you think about the gains they'd made just before this.
It is a massive reversal. And while reports vary a bit depending on how you value private assets, the consensus is clear. Bloomberg says the family's net worth dropped from around $7.7 billion to $6.7 billion. Other reports put it from $7.3 billion down to $6.2 billion.
Either way, the loss is undeniable.
The loss of capital liquidity and paper gains is huge, and this completely reverses the narrative we saw earlier this year. Their fortune reportedly tripled in a single year, jumping from $2.1 billion in 2024 to nearly $6 billion.
Driven almost entirely by their stake in Trump Media and Technology Group, TMTG, and their other crypto assets.
And the source of the reversal is the same as the source of the rise. Concentration risk. The family built what you could call an ecosystem where all their financial plays.
The media stock, the tokens, the mining.
Right. All of it was implicitly connected and depended on the same fundamental assumption. Crypto valuations must always go up.
So instead of hedging or diversifying, they essentially just doubled down on the hypergrowth narrative across a bunch of interconnected asset classes.
Exactly. They created a single point of failure scenario. So when the macro environment reversed and the risk-off mandate hit crypto, everything in that concentrated ecosystem reversed with it.
Let's break down the impact on specific holdings, starting with the highest profile one, Trump Media and Technology Group, which trades as DJT.
And its performance has been brutal. The stock plunged to new 52-week lows, trading around $10.85 a share.
And if you remember, the post-merger peak was what, $43.46?
It was. We are now talking about a decline of nearly 70% this year and a staggering 80% drop from that post-merger high.
The scale of that collapse is just immense.
Yeah.
How does that translate into personal loss for the former president's stake?
The decline in DJT stock alone has wiped out about $800 million from his stake since the September high.
So that's the vast majority of the reported billion-dollar loss right there.
It is, and it just reflects the extreme volatility that comes when a stock's valuation is driven by speculative fervor and media narrative rather than, you know, fundamental business performance.
And the fundamentals of TMTG only make it worse. We saw the Q3 earnings.
Yes, and this is the devastating part. TMTG reported extremely low Q3 sales, just $972,900, against a massive net loss of $54.81 million.
So a company with less than $1 million in quarterly revenue was valued in the billions.
It's a classic sign of market irrationality. And then the company's decision to hold crypto on its balance sheet just compounded the risk.
Right, because as Bitcoin collapsed, TMTG's balance sheet got hit with unrealized losses, deepening the perception of instability.
Exactly. Now, beyond the stock, the more speculative ventures linked to the family have also seen dramatic implosions.
Like the meme coins.
The Trump-branded meme coin, Trumpy, has seen a massive 25% decline since August. It's trading near its lowest value since launch. These tokens are pure sentiment thermometers.
And the World Liberty Financial Token, WLFI, that had an ambitious valuation at one point.
WLFI saw its value plummet from around 26 cents in September down to roughly 15 cents. At its peak, this project was valued around $6 billion, based almost entirely on speculation.
And Eric Trump's investment in mining
also hit hard. His investment in the mining operation, American Bitcoin Corporation, has dropped by approximately 50% from its peak. Public investors in that venture are down around 45%.
Mining companies are acutely sensitive to the price of BTC, so that makes sense.
Their margins just vanish when the price drops this sharply.
So we've seen this multi-billion dollar contraction in the family's net worth, tied directly to the DJT decline and the systemic collapse across their crypto assets. Yet, Eric Trump maintains a surprisingly bullish public stance.
He has. He's maintained a classic contrarian viewpoint, describing the downturn not as a crisis, but as a great buying opportunity.
Which underscores the deeply speculative nature of their approach. For most people, seeing an 80% loss in a stock is a signal to de-risk, not double down.
And it's important to contextualize this financial volatility against the current political environment, too.
Right. There's heightened scrutiny of the family's financial activities.
We've seen ongoing controversy, for example, around the pardoning of a top crypto executive who previously played a key role in bolstering the family's net worth. That link adds a layer of uncertainty.
And the broader political landscape is fragile, with reports of low approval ratings and internal party divisions over things like the Jeffrey Epstein files.
It all creates a confluence of stress factors that amplify the negative financial sentiment. The core lesson here for every investor is just the fragility of highly concentrated wealth based on speculative assets.
That concentration risk is a crucial theme. But while institutions are dumping and this high-profile speculative wealth collapses, we need to shift gears to the contrarians who are making massive strategic bets, specifically on Ethereum.
This segment really shows the divergence between market sentiment and institutional conviction. While fear is rampant, some major players are viewing this as a generational buying opportunity.
And the biggest example is BitMine, a company linked to Fundstrat's Tom Lee.
BitMine is aggressively accumulating Ethereum. They recently acquired an additional 21,537 ETH, valued at roughly $59 million.
And this is happening despite the fact that Ethereum's price is struggling, and BitMine itself is likely sitting on billions in unrealized paper losses.
It's a classic contrarian move, and this latest purchase pushes their total holdings past 3.5 million ETH.
3.5 million.
It cements their status as one of the single largest corporate ETH holders. To put that in perspective, they now control roughly 3% of Ethereum's entire circulating supply.
So if they're facing these huge paper losses, what gives the management team, especially Thomas Lee, such confidence to keep buying into weakness?
The management team is completely undeterred because they attribute the downturn not to fundamental weakness in crypto, but to broader external liquidity shocks.
So they see this as a temporary event.
Lee views this through the lens of history. He's wildly optimistic, predicting a V-shaped recovery, a sharp bounce back once the market stabilizes.
And they're backing that conviction with concrete utility plans.
That's a strategic angle. They plan to launch the Made in America Validator Network, or MEVN, in early 2026. This isn't just about holding, it's about monetizing.
So they'll be staking their massive ETH reserve.
Exactly, generating recurring yield rewards. This strategically positions them as the premier U.S. staking destination. It's a move to capitalize on the shift toward institutional yield generation.
But as U.S. firms are accumulating ETH, another significant player is quietly making a massive comeback. And this has geopolitical implications.
China's crypto mining industry.
It's one of the most surprising developments given the 2021 ban.
New data suggests that China's banned crypto mining industry is expanding again, quietly reclaiming 14% of the global Bitcoin hash rate.
Which places them third worldwide behind the US and Russia. How is this happening when the ban is still officially in place?
The primary driver is economic opportunism in remote regions like Xinjiang. These areas have abundant excess power that can't be efficiently exported.
So private operators are just leveraging cheap, underutilized energy.
Precisely. And we're seeing market confirmation of this through hardware sales figures.
Right. Pain and Ink.
A major global producer of mining machines reported that more than half of its Q2 sales revenue was from China. Miners don't buy hardware if they aren't confident they can operate it profitably.
It certainly shows that Bitcoin mining is fundamentally resilient to localized bans if the economics are compelling enough. Now, let's pivot away from Bitcoin and Ethereum's infrastructure and look at the broader altcoin market, where we see unique catalysts and chaos playing out at the same time.
The altcoin market is a fascinating mix right now. While they are suffering, some assets have extremely powerful, unique catalysts that are kind of insulating them. And we have to start with XRP.
Which just had a massive institutional access moment today, November 24th. The dual spot ETF launch for Franklin Templeton and Grayscale on the NYSE.
It is the ultimate stamp of institutional approval. Analysts are projecting a massive influx of liquidity, with combined daily volume estimated to reach between $150 and $200 million by November 26th.
That's a serious counterweight to the Bitcoin-driven fear. And the anticipation around Grayscale's GXRP is particularly high, isn't it?
It is. Existing institutional holders in the older Grayscale Trust can now convert into this new, highly liquid ETF. It's a game changer for accessibility for traditional wealth managers.
And beyond the ETFs, the XRP community is looking at internal value capture.
They're actively discussing staking proposals, which Bitwise CIO Matt Hugin noted would significantly strengthen XRP's economic model. Staking incentivizes long-term holding.
And Ripple's internal strategy seems designed to stabilize the price, too.
Their CTO, David Schwartz, has been vocal about diversifying revenue streams, like with their proposed RLUSD stablecoin. If they can generate revenue elsewhere, it reduces their historical need to sell XRP to fund operations.
And looking at the charts, XRP seems to be holding up much better than Bitcoin.
Technical analysts observe it's holding firmly above $2.06. And while the short-term trend is bearish, the long-term trend, the 200-day moving average, is still rising.
So they see this as a consolidation phase, not a structural bear market setup.
For XRP, yes. Now, while XRP gets that boost, let's look at Ethereum, which has a major internal catalyst coming up that a lot of people seem to be overlooking.
The Fusaka upgrade.
Expected around December 3rd. Matt Hugin at Bitwise believes this upgrade is absolutely critical for Ethereum's future economic model.
Okay, we need to spend time on this because the potential impact sounds huge. How does Fusaka actually work?
Fusaka introduces a minimum base fee for layer 2 data, so the data that solutions like Arbitrum and Optimism post back to the main Ethereum chain.
So it guarantees a baseline revenue stream from that booming layer 2 ecosystem.
Precisely. As L2 usage continues to scale, this new fee mechanism captures a significant portion of that activity and locks it into the core network. And since ETH's base fee is burned,
it makes ETH more deflationary.
Far more. Hugin's estimates suggest this could increase ETH's overall network revenue capture by 5 to 10 times. It could position ETH for a major rebound.
It shifts the narrative from pure speculation to quantifiable economic value capture.
Absolutely. It makes the ultrasound money thesis far more compelling. Hugin also points to Uniswap's UNI token as another example of improving token economics.
What's the plan there?
The community is discussing activating UNI's fee switch. If approved, it would redirect about 16% of trading fees toward burning UNI tokens. This dramatic supply reduction could fundamentally change its scarcity profile.
Okay, turning to Cardano. We saw a recent network test that, while it seemed concerning at first, actually proved its resilience.
It demonstrated remarkable stability. The network had a temporary partition from a bug, but it successfully converged back to a single healthy chain within 14.5 hours.
That rapid convergence is a massive demonstration of maturity.
It is. It proves the internal consensus mechanisms function under maximum stress, and the ecosystem has major dates coming up, especially for derivatives trading access.
Coinbase Derivatives is launching 24/7 trading for altcoin futures.
With new perpetuals specifically for Cardano launching on December 12th, that significantly expands regulated access.
Now for the great paradox of this crash. Despite all the fear, the AI presale narrative is absolutely exploding. It seems like the demand wave hitting traditional tech, like NVIDIA's $57 billion in Q3 revenue, is directly fueling new crypto projects.
The crypto market always finds a new growth engine, and AI is it. Let's start with DeepSnitch AI.
Okay.
It's leading the pack by blending AI directly with retail trading tools. It tracks whale wallets and flags risky smart contracts. It's raised over $500,000 and is seen as a potential 100x because it targets a core retail need, safety.
And what about Bitcoin Hyper? It's trying to solve Bitcoin's biggest flaw, right? Speed.
This is a technically significant project. Bitcoin does 7 transactions per second. Bitcoin Hyper is solving this by using the Solana Virtual Machine, or SVM.
So it's bringing Solana's speed to Bitcoin's security layer.
That's the key innovation, bringing fast, low-cost dApps to Bitcoin's proof-of-work layer. They've already raised over $28 million.
We've also got Blockdaig, which is transitioning from hype to focusing on infrastructure.
They've raised a huge $436 million, and now we're seeing institutional deals for 2.6 billion tokens. This suggests institutions see it as a serious layer one project.
And finally, Best Wallet.
Positioning itself as a rival to MetaMask and Trust Wallet, they're already live and are offering aggressive high yields, staking up to 76% APY to attract users quickly.
The AI presale boom clearly illustrates that innovation doesn't stop just because institutions are selling. But we have to connect all this crypto chaos to the wider macroeconomic forces at play.
We can't view this in a vacuum. Deutsche Bank's recent analysis links the Bitcoin decline to 4 main macro pressures: pervasive risk-off sentiment, hawkish Fed signals, stalled regulation, and dangerously thinning liquidity.
The Federal Reserve factor is arguably the most critical. Uncertainty over whether the Fed will go ahead with a December rate cut has strengthened bets that they might halt their easing.
And higher interest rates, or the expectation of them, immediately weakens investor confidence in risk assets like crypto. Capital flows away from speculation and into safer yielding assets.
And the thin liquidity factor is crucial. Even minor selling can have an outsized impact on price, which is exactly what we've been seeing.
We saw an almost absurd example of this recently. President Trump's decision to lift food import tariffs, a move to combat inflation, was unexpectedly linked to the crypto turmoil.
How did that impact Bitcoin?
Bitcoin fell below $94,000 shortly after. The theory was that the policy signaled a potential acceleration of anti-inflationary measures, reinforcing the idea that the Fed would delay rate cuts.
So a minor policy signal can trigger massive selling in a thin crypto market.
It highlights the fragility. And this crash is also tightly intertwined with broader tech stock anxiety. We're seeing high-profile warnings about an AI bubble contagion.
Right, from the very top. Sundar Pichai at Google Alphabet said there's irrationality in the AI boom and warned that no company is going to be immune if that bubble bursts.
JP Morgan's Vice Chairman Daniel Pinto echoed that. He said booming AI valuations are due for a severe reassessment, and that correction will inevitably impact the S&P 500 and other industries, including crypto.
And the danger isn't just for wealthy tech investors.
Klarna's CEO highlighted a systemic risk. Index funds are automatically allocating huge amounts of pension money into this speculative trend, so the risk of a bubble bursting impacts the retirement security of millions.
And even traditional safe havens are feeling the pinch. Gold is falling.
Gold's decline is specifically tied to fading expectations of a Fed rate cut. Higher interest rates make non-yielding assets like gold less appealing. It shows how comprehensive this risk-off environment is.
That structural pressure is undeniable. We've covered everything from the technical mechanisms of liquidation to the concentration of political wealth in crypto. and these looming macro threats.
So to synthesize the core tension here, we've seen massive concentrated losses, most visibly hitting the highly leveraged crypto sectors and the Trump family's ecosystem. It illustrates the extreme danger of these speculative bets.
But this destruction is set against a strong counter-narrative of strategic, deep conviction, buying in core assets like Ethereum by firms like Bitmain, and this rapid pace of innovation continuing in the AI presale sector.
Right. The market structure is undeniably fragile, tested by severe macro conditions, regulatory uncertainty, and institutional capitulation.
As evidenced by that multi-billion dollar ETF outflow figure.
So for you, the investor navigating this, the strategic advice is clear. Avoid the temptation to just buy every dip indiscriminately. The outlook is profoundly defensive.
So investors should wait for confluence, a calming of the macro environment, and a reduction in derivative fear before scaling in.
Exactly. The goal is positioning near high probability recovery areas, not trying to hit the exact bottom.
We've seen that over $1 billion in paper losses can be wiped out in weeks from these highly visible holdings. Yet one prominent billionaire, Eric Trump, still calls this downturn a great buying opportunity.
It creates a fascinating philosophical divide, doesn't it? If the macro environment truly stabilizes, if the Fed reverses its stance, and if rate cut bets rebound, which of the two primary narratives will ultimately define the end of 2025 and the start of 2026?
Will it be the aggressive V-shaped recovery predicted by high-conviction players like Bitmain's leadership, suggesting fundamentals will eventually overwhelm the liquidity shocks?
Or will that 60% more downside technical signal prove correct, initiating a multi-year bear market driven by a structural failure below $80,000? That is the billion-dollar question that will drive the market moving forward.